Not for the first time, we could have made multiple episodes out of the week just gone. For a start, the action on the track was fantastic. In Japan, the world's best racehorse, Equinox, produced a dazzling display. But over jumps, some of the sport's top names fluffed their lines over the weekend, one of them even refusing to start. Also on the track, British racing continues to be beset by small fields. Off the track, the sport's financial crisis appears to be worsening following news that the UK government's autumn statement might well offer the possibility of an increase in betting duty. It's all a bit much, really, but at least within the PGA, the members have been heartened by the return of a familiar face. Will, however, Paul Struthers' comeback lead to Britain's jockeys getting more of what they want? I am pleased to say I have exactly what I want, because sat next to me are my lovely Racing Post colleagues, Peter Scargill and Jonathan Harding. Took four takes to get that intro done. You guys will be on much better form today. How are we both, Peter?
Good, and in no way following the Shishkin path. I'm going to be very compliant and engage fully in what's going on today.
And it's good because the rules have changed. We're not now allowed a hunting crop in the studio. So I would have been using that, but now
Yes, more. The frequent batterings between takes has been getting too much.
I've learned my lesson. And how are you, sir?
Very well, yeah. I was just sharing before how I've had a bit of a flat emergency this week with a gas leak. But luckily my technician used to work for Aidan O'Brien. I found out within the first 5 minutes. So
that sounds like something he said. I'll tell you what. I'll curry a bit of favour and say I used to work for Aidan O'Brien.
No, because right, I tested it. His knowledge was pretty sound. Yeah. His racing knowledge was sound. So I had some nice chit-chat while he was fixing my gas issues. But he still charged me the same.
And your gas issues are now sorted?
Yes, mostly.
It's a small world because the gym instructor who was leading the circuit class in which I sprained my ankle a few days ago is also one of the owners group owners of Stage Star. And in the same gym I go to, we have one of the owners of Living the Dream. And I've done kettlebell classes with her. So it is a small world.
Well, I have no anecdote to add to that. So I'm clearly not sociable enough or in the right sort of circles.
Well, this is a series waiting to happen, isn't it?
This is it. Yeah.
If I had the hunting crop, it would have a story. Okay, first story of the week is a fantastic series of races over the weekend in Britain, Ireland and much further afield. Leading the way on this one is Mr. Jonathan Harding.
Yeah, like you say, a brilliant weekend of racing that I think sort of muddied the picture a little bit. It's obviously far too early to be talking about the Cheltenham Festival, but as far as the Gold Cup picture goes, we know a lot less than we did at the beginning of the week, I think, just in the sense of nobody wants to be favourite for that race. Yesterday we had Galopin des Champs, so impressive last year in the Gold Cup, expecting him to reverse the form with Fast or Slow, who basically beat him in April, massive surprise there. But he just didn't fire, really, I think. I don't know what you guys think, but he just didn't. He was beaten a long way out, obviously needed the run, so I wouldn't be too concerned, but he has been eased for the Gold Cup, and now Fast or Slow is a major contender. And then on Saturday in Staying Chases, we had the Betfair Chase, another one, Brave Man's Game, last year's runner-up. Don't know if failed to fire is quite right, because he still ran a good race and was beaten by a good horse in Royal Pagai, who now must be considered. And then Shishkin, who hinted that he might have the stamina for a Gold Cup last season at Aintree, rather, but just completely dug his heels in at the start at Ascot. So I wouldn't like to pin my colours to the mast for the Gold Cup winner anyway after this weekend. But a great weekend's racing.
Yeah, and we had State Man in the Morgiana Hurdle. We had Gaelic Warrior whizzing around Punchestown as well. Was a great weekend. We'll do the jumps. We'll do Equinox later. Contract the Flat for now. First of all, Pete, you have grown up with horses, unlike Jonathan and myself. You therefore probably have a better way into their minds.
I'll play up to this. Yeah,
so
okay.
Shishkin,
yes.
He didn't start. Now, it was a surprise. Of course it was a surprise. Mm. But we know from what happened last season and before that Shishkin has maybe been on a journey towards that point.
It sounds like a reality TV
contestant. Yeah, yeah. You know, Nico de Boinville interviewed him last year, and he made clear that Shishkin isn't necessarily all that straightforward, and that he knew sort of going to the start in the Ryanair Chase that maybe he wasn't on a on an absolute going day. But we've reached a point now where he didn't start. Mm. That is pretty serious, particularly as Nick Henson is looking towards the King George, where the start for the King George, again, is away from the grandstands, mm. facing away from the racecourse stables. How worried would you be if you are in the Shishkin camp?
Well, if I was in the Shishkin camp,
yes,
I'd be concerned.
Yes.
Because, like you say, it's a development, isn't it? So that we had the Champion Chase issues and yeah. then Ryanair and now this. So it's a progression. And he's been a bit of a boyo before he refused to start, didn't he? So he was sort of, mm. they had to lead him in, which led yeah. to the rather amusing scene, I shouldn't say amusing, really, of the star's assistant going, can't do anything. There's nothing more I can do. This blasted horse. That the exasperation we've all felt from time to time with horses. So he's an old boy now, Shishkin. You know, he's nine, yeah. isn't he? He's getting on, and he's had issues in the past. And look, trying to get inside the mind of a horse is impossible. Whatever. I'm not Monty Roberts.
No.
Or Craig Witherford.
No.
Or Gary Witherford.
No.
I am a mere journalist, Lee.
But a very good one.
Oh, thank you. So I don't know what's causing it, but clearly there is something that's either he doesn't want to race because it's going to hurt him for some reason, or he thinks it's going to hurt him for some reason, or he's clever.
Yeah.
And if he's clever, that's a problem because clever horse, what you want is a really talented, really thick horse, because they don't realise that they'll get treated exactly the same regardless to what happens. But Shishkin knows that I actually don't have to do this because yeah. I'm still going to be treated really well and fed and everyone's going to love me. And I don't actually have to do any of this. So yeah. if he's figured that out and he's a clever boy, then that's the issue. But they also put cheek pieces on him at Ascot.
Yeah, and there's talk that we won't do that again in the future.
You know, there's all these sort of things. And you're not necessarily going to get in a situation where he's not going to jump off in every single race he runs in now. But it's always going to be there at the back of your yeah. mind. But also with Shishkin, I raced in the front runner today about whether he should have been a runner
yes,
in that
race. Yes, I read
race.
That. Yep.
Oh, thank you. Yep. I'm glad somebody
yep. did. No, I did. And I got the impression that you think he shouldn't have been a runner.
I'm merely a conduit for people to express their views. But
yes.
it seems slightly unfair
yeah.
that he was deemed a runner when he didn't run.
Yeah, it was always John McCrerick's big thing, that unless you start, you're not a runner.
I mean, was it Wexford, that race where the yeah. horse got yeah. the head start and then it ran to the first yeah. hurdle and went, nah, don't want this. Right, he refused, but he raced, didn't he? But this horse didn't even run.
Yeah.
And if I'd have been a punter, I'd have been a bit cheesed off by that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Leaving aside rule fours and the people who...
I can see that.
All that kind of stuff. I think, really, if you bet on a horse and it doesn't start, you should just get your money back. You know, it seems a really simple thing to change, Lee. And I'm all for simplicity.
Well, before we carry on with the horsey stuff, what's your view? Do you agree?
I'd be inclined to agree because I think it has enormous ramifications, doesn't it? Shishkin would have been one of the most backed horses of the day. I don't have that information to
he'd
hand.
He'd been in a lot of perms, you imagine.
He'd been in a lot of multiples, yeah. a lot of bets, and you think the fairest thing would be to just almost void that element of it.
Yeah.
And there's no grey area there.
No, okay. We probably could be back in Shishkin anti-post for the Cheltenham Gold Cup based on what he did on Saturday. Be nervous for months if you did do that. But who would you be backing for the Cheltenham Gold Cup anti-post now? So we referenced Galopander Shaw, you referenced Galopander Shaw. Mm-hmm. He was disappointed. His jumping wasn't great early on in the race. Willie Mullins was disappointed. Fast or slow, got a second verdict over him in the John Dirk. And appreciate it, ran a good race too, ran a career best race. Brave Man's Game was probably disappointing in the Betfair chase. I think Paul Nicholls was suggesting he thought the horse had maybe been outstayed by Royal Pagaille, but obviously you need stamina to win a Gold Cup. He was second last year to Galopin des Champs. Protectorat was disappointing again. We know obviously Jerry Colomb was very good the week before. Gold Cup picture looks murky, but equally it's fascinating.
Yeah, and it's good. We want at this stage of the season, we don't want an odds-on shot in the Gold Cup who everyone sort of knows is going to be there or thereabouts. We like a little bit of intrigue and a few ebbs and flows. I mean, I'm a forgiving man,
yeah,
as you know.
Very much so.
So I can forgive Galopin des Champs a bad run.
Two bad runs?
I can forgive that. Okay.
Not two bad runs, two below par runs.
Yeah, I think he probably needed that run a little bit.
Okay. It's November, isn't it?
It is. And William Mullins is a Cheltenham Festival trainer, isn't he? He aims him towards the
festival. He's had a winner or two there,
He's done rather well at it, yes. So, that wouldn't have been D-Day.
No.
Same is true of Brave Man's Game. Wasn't D-Day. I think you could expect a better run from him. I almost think his target is more the sort of King George, and then the Gold Cup will be an additional, because I'm not convinced he quite gets up the hill in the way a Galopin Deschamps or another one does. Mm-hmm. I think Galopin Deschamps should still be favourite. I think Jerry Colombe would be the one that interests me. And another horse that does interest me is L'Empress, who we've all slightly forgotten about.
Now,
given the sort of form of Venetia Williams, it'd be interesting to see if he comes back, if he's able to come back in the King George and then set up a tilt at Cheltenham. Because he was ruled out, wasn't he, in the build-up last season. Brown advisory winner. He's the one who hasn't been out yet to damage his reputation, which means he's a bit of an unknown.
But then we've got the issue then, people won't win their horses, Lee, to protect their reputation.
Well, on the L'Empress thing, I know, so Venetia was asked about him after the Betfair Chase, and she did indicate that he might not be there for the King George. It's just taken a while to come to hand. So hopefully we'll see him at Kempton, but maybe not. Over hurdles, State Man was really impressive in the Morgiana. Oh, we did well in the Morgiana.
We'll be saying the same about Constitution Hill.
Absolutely. Be more interesting what Anne Perry Pass does almost next weekend. Moving away from specific horses onto a specific issue, namely the health of jump racing. We've already discussed on this show the dominance of Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott in Ireland. And obviously we saw more of that in terms of numerically represented in the big races last week. So maybe just leave that to one side. But small fields in British jump racing. Again, we had that walkover at Warwick. We had four runners in the Betfair Chase, four runners in the 1965 Chase, five runners in the Ascot Hurdle. At the start of the season, in our big jump out pull out, Ed Chamberlain, ITV Racing's lead presenter, said that those foreign races, they're just no use to us at ITV. The general sports fan won't even look at the race, let alone watch the race. How is it right to say it's a crisis, or are we just going through a bad time, Pete?
It's a bad time.
Yeah.
Is it a bad time working towards a crisis?
Okay.
We're heading in the direction of a crisis, and this was the weekend last year where we had all the non-runners at Ascot,
Edward Stone, L'Empress,
all that sort of stuff, and it was all a bit of a disaster. So perhaps it's not necessarily a surprise. It's the same weekend. Is there some sort of elements of the race program or where it falls that's impacting it at all?
Mm-hmm. The knee-jerk reaction is to say the programme doesn't fit the horse population, cut the races. But for me, the race programme should be aspirational. It would be a race to the bottom for me if you cut it just because the horse population is down. You're almost looking at the problem looking at the symptom rather than the actual problem, which is getting the number of horses up and making sure the horse population is healthy.
Which
and
is then, a problem at the minute with Ireland having most of the best horses. Our number of top horses is down.
And then you tailor the programme to what is a representative year rather than a year where it's down. If you just tailor it to a declining horse population, the programme's going to get worse and worse and Britain's going to fall further behind Ireland, which is doom-mongering there.
It's what Donald McCain was saying in his interview with those horses, wasn't it? You got a bad horse to run, happy days, because you know those fields are full and there's lots of bad races. It's the same on the flat, but if you've got a middling to good horse, it's a bit more troublesome. Perhaps they've got a slightly better program in Ireland, and who's incentivized to have a horse?
They need to look at the novice program. I think that's the one that seems to be the most impacted at the moment.
Well, yeah, but that's fair. But the thing with novice chases, I mean, that's been a problem for as long as I can remember, you know, and the sport has tried so many different ways to boost field sizes in novice chases. The current system is to increase the number of novice handicap chases and remove or bring down the number of weight for age conditions novice chases. But again, every day when we've got one of those races, there are two, three, four runners in them. You know, we need those races, but they're just not producing fields that are conducive to, certainly not conducive towards delivering betting turnover.
We've also got that, I mean, perhaps that issue's being magnified by you know, these super stables, which I know is an issue that Chris Cook has spoken about a lot. You know, if you've Paul Nicholls or Nicky Henderson or, you know, these guys, they're not going to want to run all their novices against each other. They're going to want to pick them through. And I know they've talked about their own issues with trying to find races for these horses now, ironically. Yeah. But, you know, if there was a better spread, would there be a more of an inclination to, you know, if we all had a horse, we all might be more inclined to all run our horse in the race. Whereas if you had all the horses, like normal, then you might not want to run all your horses in the race.
Tell you what, if I did have a horse right now, I'd quite like him to be called Equinox.
What a segue that is.
Thank you. It doesn't happen by accident, this viewers. He was incredible in the Japan Cup. I mean, I watched that race thinking this is pretty much the... I think Christopher Mayer used the phrase, the perfect horse. Mm. And he did look like the perfect horse. Did exactly what Le Mayer wanted him to do. Picked up incredibly well. Won a top Group 1 on the bridle. For me, there is no doubt now that he's absolutely an all-time great. You know, we use that phrase, an all-time great, as opposed to not just very good, an all-time great. He's an all-time great, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it didn't actually look real, that race replay, the way he quickened and went away. It almost looked like a simulation because it was so easy. Mm. And he's not beating average horses either. You know, this is a top race and he's been campaigned in top races the whole time. When you talk about an all-time great, you often... We're quite insatiable, aren't we? We always want a little bit more. I would have loved to have seen him take on a few more of sort of Europe's best, Australia's best, travel.
He did go to Dubai.
Yeah.
And met some of those horses there.
Wallop them.
And wallop them.
He did,
and
yeah.
He might yet race next year.
I'm probably being a little uncharitable. I'd just like to see a little bit more of him. I would have loved to have seen Ace Impact obviously stay in training and see what that matchup would have been like.
Well, at least, you know, Ace Impact's career was... but a matter of months. Mm. You know, at least with Equinox, we've seen him across a number of seasons. He's taken on older horses, he's taken on younger horses.
Yeah, he has travelled.
Absolutely.
Perhaps not too decent. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, lovely.
I just want to see him on the doorstep.
Yeah, can you bring him to race down near Streatham?
Ideally. Yeah,
racing around Streatham Common for me, that'd be ideal.
How good do you think he's?
Well, he's an outstanding horse, isn't he? I think it was a point I did a front runner last week with Fran Berry, and he's saying, in these races in Japan, what they want to do is they want to test the horse. They want to say, well, everyone says he's really good, so I'm going to test him and see how good he is. So you get representative fields. Yeah. And I think it was the Japanese Triple Tiara winner in second, wasn't it?
And then absolutely.
The previous year's Japanese Oaks winner in third, and then the Japanese Derby winner
astonishing,
in
really.
Fourth. Nirazine, who's obviously a talented horse, and that's however come travel stuff, he was well beaten. The race was blown apart by Panther Lassa going off like a million miles an hour. So, I mean, it was a representative race and he was extremely good. And, God, I was taken by how emotional they were after the race. They all sort of broke down, didn't they?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, which is great to see.
I mean, it is great to see.
We get it in Australia with Chris Waller, but we don't see that sort of emotion enough on participants.
But you'd have thought if you're riding this or being involved with this astonishingly good horse, everything would just be great.
Yeah.
It never seems to get injured, runs all the time. I'd be like... this is easy.
The pressure.
This is easy, but clearly, and he must. You know, Christophe Lemaire in particular has ridden a lot of good horses. He had Rode Armadai, who you know won the Japan Cup herself and all sorts of races. And this guy's breaking down in tears afterwards, having ridden Equinox. So he's an astonishing horse. Obviously, his racing is now that's going to be up for debate, isn't it? And where he fits in. But I don't know. Sometimes it's more than just a number on a piece of paper, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll get a good racing after.
Damn well deserves to.
And he'll be the best horse in the world, won't he?
But
he's probably not going to be up with Frankel or Flightline on the numbers.
No.
And some people might want to criticise him for racing in Japan all the time, but I wouldn't go out of Japan given the amount of money on offer.
No, and Frankel never left Britain, did he?
He didn't, no.
No. And we don't hold that against him.
But no, it was an astonishing performance, well worth getting up. I was really pleased that it was broadcast live as well, giving us that opportunity to see. And look, Japanese racing's in a fantastic position.
Astonishing.
And, you know, the Yoshida family will be buying outstanding mares for Equinox at the sales coming up. It's going to further progress what's going on there. And they seem to cherish these outstanding middle distance horses. They're not all after pre-Royal Ascot 2-year-olds like that. other places are.
Absolutely right. Well, I think we were all excited, left on a high by that, gave us a great feeling. So now to bring the mood back down again to my story. It never rains but pours, it seems, for British Racing's finances at the moment. We've said on this programme a number of times about the whole affordability check situation with the gambling white paper, and we know that that rumbles on, and we make for more direction and information on that one. But a bolt from the blue came along in the autumn statement delivered by Jeremy Hunt on Wednesday to the House of Commons. And not actually within the words that Jeremy Hunt spoke, but in the document, the written document that came along with the autumn statement, was a small section that talked about remote betting duty. At the moment, the three elements are taxed at different rates. So general betting duty, which includes horse racing, and pool betting duty are taxed at 15%, with remote gaming duty taxed at 21%. And within this written document to the autumn statement came news that the government is proposing that those three rates are unified into one rate, and there will be a consultation to that effect. And the logical deduction from that is that all three would then end up being taxed at 21%. Might not be, could be lower, could be higher, but 21% seems the obvious settlement at the moment. Now, for bookmakers, that is clearly not good news, but it's not good news either, potentially, for racing and racing punters. How might bookmakers react if that does happen, if the betting duty does go up? Well, you'd imagine straight away that margins will become worse for punters, that some offers might be rescinded, such as best odds guaranteed. You might as well imagine that in British Racing's current discussions with bookmakers about levy reform, that bookmakers could hold that as a bargaining card against racing. And of course, bookmakers also are massive sponsors of British Racing and regular partners. They offer wise words, sage advice, sage guidance, if you like, on betting matters. And they believe that bookmakers will look at what is being done. And if they do have to pay money, more money to the Treasury, that 50% of that money will come in marketing spend being reduced. So that's not great news for British Racing. None of it is good news for British Racing. It's a surprise as well, because Lucy Fraser, the Culture Secretary, and others in government have repeatedly stressed that they don't want to damage the sport through affordability checks. How then could the government have introduced this potential policy proposal? And the answer seems to be, from our understanding, that neither Number 10 nor the DCMS were aware of what the Treasury was planning to put into the autumn statement with regards remote betting duty. And that hopefully will give the government a way out of that policy or policy proposal. But who knows? John, were you surprised?
Yeah, a little bit surprised. I mean, the thing for me is the big issue racing has is that it is put into the same box as all forms of gambling. And I think the government and outside our relatively small circle, that is an issue, a perception issue, that all gambling falls under one bracket and, you know, putting it bluntly, is viewed as something that is detrimental. It's not viewed as a hobby or a pastime by many people, I think it's fair to say. We know that betting on sport, betting on racing, is entirely different to games of chance, casino games. We also know that those games have different risks and different margins for operators. So to my mind, it's quite right that betting on online gaming, or the tax, sorry, on online gaming should be higher, because for bookmakers, there's less risk. There's a pretty set win-loss ratio. Yeah. There's a pretty good idea of what they're going to get out of those games. And that margin is a lot higher than sports betting, where someone might know more than the bookmaker and might have a massive win and put them back. To the tune of six figures, you don't know. But it's representative for me of that blurring of the lines. And I think for horse racing's sake, it has to be, whether it's in a position to be ring fenced, whether it can stake that claim, I don't know. But it needs to have a different deal with the government, both with affordability, with betting tax. The tax on the betting on racing and sports generally needs to be differentiated somehow. And this intimates to me logically that it's perhaps not going to be.
Lee, I can't get my head around.
Go on.
From your excellent column today.
It's very sweet of you.
How they give me a proposal that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
That's like me writing something, having it published in the paper, and then the editor opening the paper the next day and going, what the hell is this? I mean, he probably does that anyway, but do you know what I mean? Without his knowledge, it seems bizarre that something like that
could
happen.
It does seem bizarre, but you approach that from a position where you assume that politicians and all our great political leaders and the departments within which they work are necessarily performing and working as they should do. I think recent history would suggest that if you start with a low expectation of what they might achieve, you're probably going to be more satisfied than if you start with a high expectation. Then there is also as well, if you speak to people within politics, a view that the Treasury is a bit of a lone wolf. No other government department tends to like the Treasury because they don't give them as much money as they want and they often take money away from what they would want to spend. And nobody tends to like the Treasury, and the Treasury therefore does act as this lone wolf, lone island. So it is surprising, but it does offer hope that if our understanding is correct, and we believe it is, that neither Number 10 nor the DCMS were really aware this was going to happen, that they do at least have an option for when this consultation process goes along, they can say, well, we can see why it might be a good idea to unify the rates, but we fear that doing that would have a bad effect on British horse racing. Because don't forget as well, that when we started talking about changes to levy reform, that was meant to bring a whole heap of money into racing. The way things are going at the minute, it's just going to try and wrestle back a bit of what's disappearing elsewhere.
That's good fun, this, isn't it? Hey, it's like what's that term they use? Is it the Force Road Bridge where you paint it and then by the time you finish painting it,
there's always something.
Just exploding the Force Road Bridge.
Well, absolutely. And of course, this is all within the context of the fact that there's going to be an election probably next year. I was speaking to folk last week who were increasingly of the opinion that the election will be on May the 2nd, the same date as the local elections, for a number of reasons. But in terms of the autumn statement, the fact that the national insurance cut has been accelerated to start on January, there's a fair chance that there'll be an income tax cut in the March budget. If both those happen, they'll hope to get bounces, and therefore May might be the time to go. And of course, you've got to pay for tax cuts. This would only be a relative drop in the ocean, but it would help.
It's the Guineas 2 days after the election. Can they just not stake a bit on, City of Choice and win the Guineas, though? Would that not be a way to make a few quid for the...
Well, again, based on low expectation of politicians, well, not necessarily be surprised they might want to do that. But it's not good, is it? It's another reason for racing. They just think, oh, my, what are you trying to do to us?
Yeah, and there's a lot of conjecture at the moment, isn't there? It's just slightly... I think it's taken a lot of people by surprise, not least bookmakers who sort of met with the Treasury last Friday. To basically say what on earth's going on.
Because they had no inkling this was coming?
And I don't know, you might be putting one and one together to make three. So there's a bit of, this is slightly drawing a logical conclusion, but they probably have perhaps looked at bookmakers' margins and contribution to the Treasury. You'd imagine that would be down in light of affordability checks and a drop in betting turnover. Could this be, looking at it rather cynically, trying to recoup some of that, trying to get those numbers back up by potentially increasing the tax? I say potentially we still need to put a bit of meat on the bones here. But from what we know and the logical conclusions we draw from that, it is worrying.
Better news on our race cards. The app, the race card apps on the Racing Post app these days are absolutely fantastic. Evidence of that comes in this short film.
You spoke, we listened. Introducing Race Cards Redefined. 3 brand new and unique race cards tailored for your needs. Our new and improved standard race card is the punter's favourite and is everything you need to make your selection. Get the maximum amount of information in the palm of your hand with Expert View. Cover all areas and get all the same information as our newspaper. With Compact View, you can make a quick decision on who to back. View more runners and more odds on one race. Which race card will you choose?
Time now to go to story number three. It involves Mr. Paul Struthers and is delivered by Mr. Peter Scargill.
It's probably the least surprising piece of news of the year, isn't it?
I think that.
That's sort of the you know, we're talking about low expectations earlier.
You're not selling it for the front page.
Well, I've come to know that this is a very undemocratic process in here for the front page. But anyway, Paul Struthers coming back is a big story.
Yeah.
Because it's a story that is good for the jockeys, as in they are very happy. I can't think of an appointment in racing or many places that has been so universally sort of gleefully received.
Within the membership ranks, anyway.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think a lot of people say, yeah, Paul, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because he was in charge of the PGA for the best part of 10 years.
Yeah.
And the jockeys, you know, loved him, didn't they, basically? And he loved them. This it's quite sort of personal relationship was something that was fostered by him and Nigel Payne, the former chairman. They really got to know the jockeys intimately, didn't they, in terms of their wants and their needs, and represented them, you know, very effectively, really, for a long period of time. So it was a logical return. I can see why it would work for both sides. Obviously, Paul went off to do his own consultancy, which obviously had, you know, probably modest success.
We should say he left at a difficult time.
Well, you've got to the end. People tell me I have a habit of rather winding my way to the point.
Sorry,
it's nice that it takes us on a journey.
Yeah, I'm a storyteller.
Yeah,
what can I say?
So, can I tell you a story?
But no, you're right. So, yeah. Paul Struthers left at the end of 2021 after the issues around Robbie Dunne and Bryony Frost.
Yeah.
And that needs to be remembered in all of this. You know, it's not some sort of triumphant return for a man who was unfairly removed from his position. They messed up badly with the Frost Dunne thing. The weighing room was in a terrible place. And, you know, if they, my concern with Paul coming back, he's an excellent operator, he's a great guy. I like him a lot, and he will represent the jockeys very effectively. But if he's seen as their guy, we've got our guy back. It was a big issue that was blown out of proportion beforehand. Then that's not going to be a good environment that's created, is it? He needs to come in and needs to be able to listen to the jockeys and represent them. But he can't just be like a yes man. I'm back. Come on, guys. We've got the old band's back together. It's all going to work. Because that was shocking. The situation under which
it was, one of the final statements saying that they believe that Bryony felt bullied as opposed to was bullied. So that's only 2 years ago. Mm. But as you say, the jockeys do love him. I mean, it's very rare that you see Ryan Moore quoted on any story after a big race, but he said how delighted he
back
was
back where he belongs,
and having the support of guys like Ryan Moore in the weighing room is clearly crucial to anyone who leads that sort of, it leads the PGA. It was the same case when AP McCoy was riding. You needed to have AP with you. I'm sure it's the same situation with Ryan Moore. Pete, you say you can't just be a yes man. That's important too. The shape of the PGA board has changed since Paul was in it now. I think 8 of the 14 board members are current or former jockeys. Mm-hmm. There's a danger that you can just do what they want you to do. And certainly Paul, in his time out of the job, has been saying what they would want a leader to say, particularly on the whip issue, where his language has been extremely strong. Now, you can use language like that when you're not in a position of authority, when you're not within racing's hierarchy. You probably can't do that when you're in the role. You need to be a little bit more willing to compromise, if I can see the other point of view. Now, Paul was very good at that when he did the job before. He was an excellent operator, but he almost needs to leave behind some of the things that he said in the last year. Is that fair or not?
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's entirely my point.
Yeah.
That, you know, there was the issue, I don't know why I keep calling it, Robbie Dunne bullied Bryony Frost, and it caused civil war in the right weighing room, didn't it? Caused all sorts of difficulties. Paul Struthers left, as was the right thing to do. And they tried to change things around. They brought in Ian McMahon as chief executive. They changed the board. John Holmes stayed on as chair. And then that didn't work, and there was a civil war again, and there was a coup, basically, wasn't there? There was a coup. They ousted,
Board members
they ousted everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been a really tumultuous period. And you could understand if everybody just wanted to get things back and calm in the end. Well, we'll sort things out and everything will be fine. Look, Paul has to stand up for the jockeys, obviously. But there's things like, they've been quite outspoken about things like saunas at the moment. And they've been quite outspoken about things like the one meeting rule. And, you know, personally, obviously, I'm not a jockey, as you can see from my outstanding build. But things like, you know, really driving through something on saunas, for example, and, you know, just to try and appease jockeys wouldn't seem a particularly sensible move to me. I mean, I don't know what you think about these sort of issues that could become real flashpoints.
Yeah, there's a tightrope to be walked, isn't there? But I think jockeys are right to want somebody to come in and get on the front foot, but it's getting on the front foot without being deliberately provocative and actually making life harder. He's somebody who will put their views forward, you would hope, in a fairly, with enough strength, but also quite diplomatically. I think that was, as you alluded to, that was his, he did have a knack of doing that before. That was probably why he was so effective in that role, in that he knew the game, but he was also able to, when he needed to push on behalf of jockeys, he could. It's a difficult job that he's inheriting with various things. And I think the jockeys have almost, there's a build up there on so many issues because the PGA has been in such turmoil. There's been some good people there trying to keep the ship steady, but at the same time, they have been on the back foot and slightly behind the ball on a few big issues, and things have slightly got away from them. So I'd imagine there will be a swell of opinion for, like Pete suggests, for Paul Struthers to go out and almost wage war, but I think that would be counterintuitive. And I think Paul Struthers will know that as well. He'll just want to keep it calm, push on the right issues when they have a balanced argument, but also, you know, be conciliatory as well and try and work with people.
And on a slightly tangential point, Lee, obviously we are barreling down towards premierisation in the new era of British horse racing. Are you excited?
Yeah.
Presumably jockeys are going to be quite important in this.
Absolutely.
So having a real good operator like Paul Struthers, who the jockeys nobody's going to represent them and they get on with, presumably will help this, because jockeys are going to surely be central to the whole thing.
So
perhaps on a premierisation front, so I'm trying not to smirk too much when I talk about premierisation, that will be beneficial to having him back in position.
One thing I probably would want to say as well is that there will be a need for collective responsibility, if you like, among the PGA board and the PGA's senior ranks, often in racing. It's not just a PGA thing. Getting collective responsibility from within those leading bodies isn't easy. Dale Gibson, who has been the interim chief executive now twice, hasn't always enjoyed that sort of collective responsibility from within the top team. But I think he is someone who, if you look within senior racing leaders, I mean, he has been a tireless worker for the PGA. He hasn't had an easy job, and he would say himself that not every decision he has got done has been right. But goodness, if the jockeys feel that they have someone in their corner in Paul Struthers, they also do in Dale Gibson. And he's probably one of the sport's unsung heroes.
No, absolutely, and he's been the one constant through all of this, and it would have probably been easy at times for him to just say, this is far too much work, because imagine it's difficult to get consensus anywhere, let alone among a very diverse range of jockeys of different ages, different needs, different seniority, different experiences. So for him to have sort of kept it going at a time of enormous upheaval and, you know, having basically a coup and all of these, you know, slightly dramatic, but it was really a coup, and you've got all the leadership changes. He's been there doing his absolute best to represent jockeys. If that's meant he's not been able to quite push and get on the front foot as much as he'd have liked, then so be it. But he's sort of kept the PGA functioning, at least.
Yeah, when he writes his memoirs, they're probably quite good.
Oh, absolutely, yes. You'd buy them, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and if he needs a ghostwriter, there are three available in this room. That then brings to an end this week's edition. At this point, it's always the host's role to determine who has the winning story. I know my colleague here, Mr. Scargill, a friend as well, Mr. Skarg. Hinting earlier on that this process isn't
I know the results. I know the results already, Lee.
No, well, I think
I've kept quiet for long enough on this.
I think it's a deeply cynical approach. Now, yes, I have one, but that's only really because
I pick the strongest story every time I'm host. Oh, where's the surprise?
I think that's because the betting judiciary clearly could have massive ramifications again, comes at a very serious time for the sports finances, but that is not to in any way belittle your story or a fabulous weekend of racing on the flat and over jump. So I know you'll both understand the reason I made the decision that I did. Moving swiftly on, it is time then to end this week's edition of The Front Page. I have been Lee Mottershead. These guys have been and still are Jonathan Harding and Peter Skigel. You have been the viewers, and we're very grateful to you for watching. Until next time, bye-bye.